Good morning and welcome to a Monday Food for Thought program here on KKCQ. And we have a special guest joining us over the telephone live here on Food for Thought. Bishop Andrew Cousins joining us on the program. Bishop, thank you very much for joining us on Food for Thought this morning.
Thank you, Tom. It's a delight to be with you.
Well, we have a lot to talk about. This, of course, is our monthly MCCL update here on Food for Thought. But, Bishop, we want you to share your story because, this one goes back before you were actually born, but it's a very, very interesting story to share.
Yeah, so when my parents were, when my mom was pregnant with me at about 20 weeks, they had some difficulty getting pregnant, but they were delighted when they were pregnant. And she was teaching in a Catholic school at the time. And at 20 weeks, her water broke, which, as you know, is a very serious thing on the pregnancy. So she was rushed to the hospital, and they kept her overnight, and they ran some tests. And in the morning, the doctor, he came in, and he said to her, he said, you know, ma'am, I need to inform you that the child in your womb is severely deformed. And I would recommend that we induce labor because continuing the pregnancy could be dangerous for you. And since the child is severely deformed. And my mother said, you know, no, thank you. We will take whatever child God has given us because he's a gift from God. And then the doctor said, woman, you don't understand. This child is a freak. And my mom said, you don't understand. We want a new doctor. Now, of course, my sister always argued later that I was a freak, but that's not the case, right? Yeah. What happened was they did get a new doctor, and the new doctor said to my parents that if my mother would lie in bed for the rest of the pregnancy, she spent 4 months in bed, that there was a very good chance that I would come out healthy. And that's, in fact, what happened. So my mom spent the rest of the pregnancy pretty much on bed rest the whole time. What had happened, of course, is that they discovered I had allergies to the amniotic fluid in the womb, and so whenever the sac that the baby lives in would form, I would kick to break it. Because it irritated my skin so much. And so I was born, and I did have severe allergies, and I still do have allergies, but other than that, didn't have any other handicaps. And so always grateful to God that my parents made that very sacrificial choice, you know, that they chose not to listen to the doctors, but rather to give me a chance at life. And I can tell you, I know many other people who have similar stories like that.
So I was kind of curious, did your mom go full term, or were you born early, or how'd that work out?
I was born just about a month early, so she didn't quite go full term. But I had, you know, I was around 6 or 7 pounds by that point, so I was able to survive just fine outside of the womb. I didn't have to spend any special time in an incubator or anything. Life was, for me, a process of figuring out what I wasn't allergic to. I did have a lot of food allergies and stuff. And still do, as people in the Diocese of Crookston, where I serve, know, even there in areas like Fauston and Bagley, they know that when I come, they have to watch the food so that I don't get sick.
I was kind of curious, did you or did your mother or anybody go to talk to that original doctor?
Well, yeah, that's a very important part of the story I forgot to mention. So my parents' insurance wouldn't cover the second doctor. And so when they met with him, they told him, you know, we don't know how we'll pay you because our insurance won't cover you because you're a specialist. And the doctor said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And so he went to the first doctor and he made a bet. And he said, if this baby comes out healthy, you pay me the bill. If it comes out deformed, as you say, I'll pay you the bill. And so the first doctor ended up paying the bill. In fact, when I was born and the second doctor delivered me, he said, go get that other doctor and let him come see his freak, you know, because I, of course, didn't have severe handicaps, you know.
But it goes to show, too, you were talking about when you were in the womb and you're, you know, kicking, you had the allergies you were talking about. Even at that point, you know, how developed, you know, babies are.
No, it's really true. And, it, of course, always makes the point that it's the same child in the womb who's talking on the radio today, right?
Right.
That this is how we all begin life in this fragile place. But the truth is we're the same person. And, even in the womb, the child has, you know, the ability, of course, even to feel and to know voices and those kind of things. As parents know, when the child is born and they speak to the child and it calms down, of course, mm-hmm. it recognizes their voice, right?
Right. Our guest on Food for Thought this morning is Bishop Andrew Cousins. And Bishop, I want to talk a little bit about your college years. We're jumping down the road a ways, I guess. But
yes.
You did some demonstrating at abortion clinics and actually were arrested, right?
That's true, yes. So, you know, because of my own story, I just became convicted early on about the importance of the pro-life cause and really standing up for the vulnerable and even trying to save lives when it's possible. And so in college, I was involved in a movement called Operation Rescue. And it was a very peaceful demonstration. But what we would do is we would go to the abortion clinic and we would block the entrance to the abortion clinic so that people could not get in. And when the people came to get an abortion, we would then offer those people life-saving alternatives. So we had sidewalk counselors who would go up to the cars as they were trying to get in when the entrance was blocked, and we would offer them life-saving alternatives. And so I did that quite a few times, actually. I think I ended up, you know, because that technically is trespassing when you're blocking the entrance to the abortion clinic, and you get arrested for that. And we didn't resist arrest or anything. We were peaceful, nonviolent trespassers. But we did end up keeping clinics closed for many hours during those days. And we have confirmed children who are alive because of those, you know, children who mm-hmm. their mothers couldn't get into the abortion clinic that day. And thank God their mothers chose a different answer and accepted the help that we offered. But yeah, so as it happened, I ended up serving a couple of weeks in jail because of being a repeat offender. And, so I ended up serving some time in jail in Omaha, two separate weeks. Even that was, in a certain way, a very blessed experience because just able to share about the goodness of God with the other people in jail.
Sure.
And it was kind of interesting when you go to jail, they ask you, what are you in for? And we said, well, we were blocking the entrance to an abortion clinic. And they said, what'd you do that for? We said, well, they're killing babies inside. What are we supposed to do? And even the people in jail say, well, the guy's got a point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was an adventure for sure. And, you know, it's a different world we live in today that makes it a lot more of a stiffer crime if you do that because of the change in laws. Abortion clinics are the only other place besides a military base where it's a federal offense to trespass today because of the way that President Clinton changed the laws some years ago. So it's not really feasible to do today in the same way, but it was a beautiful witness, I think, and there are children who are alive because of it.
We had Mike Brouse on Food for Thought Friday. He gave a great interview in regard to, part of it was violence toward pro-life demonstrators. I mean, it's one thing to be arrested like you were, but now, I mean, it's literally getting where the lives are in danger in many yeah. cases, and it's scary to see.
Yeah. I remember actually the first time I was sentenced to jail, and you know, you get a chance to say to the judge anything you want to say before you go to jail. And so we knew by the time we were sentenced that there was a child who was alive, because it takes a long time from the time you get arrested till the time you appear in court and get sentenced. All that stuff was months, you know. And some of our people in our group had actually held that baby. And so when the judge went to sentence me, I said to her, I said, well, if you really believe that what I did was wrong that day, then when that child's 18, you need to go to him and tell him that I shouldn't have been there and they should have been, you know, killed through abortion that day. And the judge, you know, slammed her gavel down and said 10 days in jail. So she wasn't sympathetic. But then the next day when our attorney came to bail us out, we had to pay an appeal bond so we could go back to college and then, you know, appeal the case. And the judge did say that she had trouble sleeping that night because of the things that we had said to her. And she said, if they would agree not to do this again, I would let them out, you know. And our attorney said, well, they won't agree not to do it again. So we ended up having to pay the appeal bond. But it does bring home the facts, right, that
right.
real lives are at stake in this case.
Well, where do you see things going? I mean, it's a tumultuous time, to say the least, but we've lived through them before. But where do you see things heading?
Well, you know, I think what's so important for us right now in our pro-life witness is to show we love all people. We love women. We love fathers. We love mothers. We love babies. And so the pro-life movement has been so good over the years at providing help, not just to get children to birth, but even beyond birth, right? You know, our pro-life centers in northwestern Minnesota here, we provide help, you know, for the through the first several years of life. We want to support these families. And that Christian witness, I think, that witness of charity and love for the unborn, certainly, but also for their mothers and their fathers, because many people we know choose abortion because of, you know, some kind of false need that we can really help with. So I think that's really essential. But then I think we have to consistently and stand up for the dignity of every human life, because when one life is cheapened, all lives are cheapened. And I don't think that the school shootings and the other kinds of violence we have in our cities are unrelated to the problem of abortion. Mother Teresa of Calcutta thought the same thing. She said, if a society will allow a mother to kill its baby in its womb, what else will it not do, right? Mm-hmm. So when we cheapen one life, we cheapen all life, and that's very important for us to remember.
Absolutely. I mean, that we have documented cases where there are actual surviving of an abortion. I mean, people actually survive the process.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, there's I've heard some beautiful testimonies of that. And you know, especially people who are able to testify, they survived an abortion, you know. And you see the great evil of it, because, of course, God, you know, every life is so valuable, and when that life is before you, it makes the reality so clear.
Right. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up?
No, just so grateful for your work, and grateful. I've been really enjoying getting to know the good people here of northwestern Minnesota, where I'm the new bishop. Been here about 18 months, and in fact, I think I'll be in the area there in a couple of weeks for a First Communion celebration on Memorial Day weekend. So just grateful for the many wonderful people here. And let's keep praying that we can build a culture where all life is reverenced, you know, in everything we do.
Absolutely. Anything else new at the diocese right now? Or
You know, we do have a brand new pastoral center in Crookston, and it's a retreat center. And so we're hosting retreats there a lot. And it's a beautiful building that we purchased from the Sisters of Mount St. Benedict. And we're still trying to raise enough endowment and funds for that building, but it's going really well. And I'm just so grateful to the generous people of the diocese to help us buy this new building, and really is a sign of new life for the whole Diocese of Crookston. And this week, the priests are gathering in Bemidji, all the priests of the, you know, 14 counties here in northwest Minnesota that are the Diocese of Crookston will gather here in Bemidji for our clergy days. So I appreciate people's prayers and good thoughts for that.
All right, Bishop Andrew Cousins, thank you very much for joining us on Food for Thought. It was great to chat with you, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk again soon.
Thank you, Tom. God bless. Bye-bye.